he's right here, so. Oh, he topped it. He cold topped it.
Okay. Gotta go. Yeah.
Eight iron.
Oh, he shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he out of sync.
Welcome to the Bogey Boys podcast.
We're joined here by Kevin and Mark, as always, and we've got a guest, Mr. Daniel Croft.
How's how are things? Doing, my
joys? Very well,
yeah,
very well.
Yeah, returning to the podcast.
Yeah, second time.
But you'd lost it there. Returning.
Returning. Welcome back. Oh, what was going on there?
How's fresh things? off the Open.
Yeah. Obviously, a couple of months back now, yeah. But it was, obviously, last time I spoke to you was the week before I was heading down.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we know.
Qualifying, so.
We know all about how you got there, don't we? And what happened there. Yeah. So what's been happening since?
Yeah, much of this, obviously, from a golf point of view, just kind of much of the same, really. Just obviously the Open happened and was an amazing week. And then kind of coming back down to earth from there was a bit of a fall, but it was always going to be. And then just kind of getting back on the horse then and getting back to normal and with what I would normally do and then playing. Last few months, just kind of playing in the regional tournaments and just trying to just keep going and keep pushing on and kick on from it really and keep getting better.
Are you getting stopped in the street for autographs yet or what?
Nah. I mean, listen, it wasn't like the whole thing like that was fantastic. And obviously going to the golf club where I grew up and like I seen Mark there a few weeks ago. He was playing with a mate of his, but like obviously going there, you know, everyone is coming over to you and wants to speak to you and ask all the questions and obviously at work where I work as well. But you know what? It's great. Like, I wouldn't change that because you know, you see people and things like that happen to them and they probably don't like all that people coming up to them and stuff. And I can understand it really, but at the same time, you know, I've known these people for years and I want to give them that bit of time that, you know, they've always given to me. So. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, not just them, mate. We're intrigued as well to know exactly what happened. So, talk us through the whole experience, the lead up to it. So, obviously, you've qualified for the Open. We've had you on obviously through West Lancashire through the qualifying. What was was preparation like for the tournament? Was it? Did you change anything compared to the way you would for West Lancashire?
I mean, the week before, I basically just managed to clear my schedule and work, which was good of them. I just didn't do any lessons or nothing. It was. What the biggest thing I was concerned was obviously with the COVID situation at the time, there was obviously still restrictions in place.
Yeah.
When you arrived there, you had to obviously do a COVID test to access the venue when you first got there. So like the week before, obviously I've qualified and every time I'm seeing like going up to practice, you know, at the golf clubs and where I'm based, you know, everyone's coming up to you, want to speak to you and say well done and shake your hand and all that. But I was almost trying to step back from people and say, but I can't because of that.
Oh, dear. You've got an Open to play here, mate.
Honestly, through the whole thing, like, you know, obviously I understand the risk of COVID, but I've not been like one of the people who's like scared to death by any means. But that week, I've never been so paranoid about it, like just trying to avoid getting it because obviously I thought the worst thing that can happen would be to get there and then obviously not be able to play.
That's it. It's not the actual getting the disease that you bother with. It's more the testing positive and then people banning you for 10 days and you have to watch the Open and you're like, fucking hell, done everything. Yeah.
Understood.
But no, other than that, like the week before, it was just, like I said, I managed to clear my schedule and got a good amount of practice done and went and played some links golf locally just to keep like the links kind of feel going. I went and played Wallasey and Royal Liverpool because I got mates who's members there and stuff. And the coach came with me and my caddy came with me and we just kind of just trying to get some really good prep done and get some really good kind of base routines in place for obviously getting to the Open and trying to go from there. Yeah.
Yeah. And what were the expectations going in? Obviously, you know, first go there, just going to enjoy it, or did you actually?
No, obviously I wanted to, obviously more than anything, I just wanted to go and enjoy the whole thing and feel like I was a part of it and I belong there. But obviously the goal was to go and make the cut. That was the goal. Go and make the cut. You know, if you can make the cut, that would be fantastic and see what comes from it kind of thing. You know, it didn't quite happen, but, you know, it's not the end of the world. I mean, it was the best week of my life.
It's like you've got, because you've been there and tasted it, it probably spurs you on even more to practice harder, to go, to do more than, you know, if you're just turning up every week to the Euro Pro and you're making the cut and you're doing a few bits, it's like you've had a taste of the proper way it is, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I've actually said this a lot, and it's like people have said that to me, like, you know, do you feel like you've had a taste of it now? And yeah, I mean, my whole life, you know, since I was a young kid, all I ever wanted to do was play golf, and I've worked hard for that and continue to work hard to try and do that. But being there, being in that environment, like you say, in that kind of bubble of the tour life and around them people and just even the way you get treated and stuff like that, you know, it's almost like you've got your hunger and you've just doubled it overnight. Yeah, it's just like, oh, I want this every week. But yeah, so it's definitely spurred me on even more than if that was even possible, the kind of thing to make me want to do it even more.
Yeah, and did you find it hard to strike the balance between going and being a fanboy because you're inside the ropes and going to watch the players and thinking, what, I've actually got to go and prepare myself for you?
Yeah, I mean, it was my coach, he was with me, Johnny, was doing a good job of that, like trying to say, look, I know, he basically said to me on the way before we went, he said, look, first 2 days, Sunday and Monday, like, just get it all out the way, basically. Try and, like, just watch as much as you want, stand back and admire as much as you want, take it all in as much as you want, and also almost enjoy the fact that you're there and you've got there. But then from Tuesday, let's knuckle down and let's, you know, obviously we're going to practice Sunday and Monday, but from Tuesday, let's just switch all that off then and let's just concentrate. And to be fair, I did, and there's only a couple of occasions on the range. Like, I walked on the range on Sunday afternoon. We got down there, got there, did the test, and you could then go and, even though I was waiting on my result, you could still go and use the range and, like, the outdoor facilities. You just couldn't go into the clubhouse or anything yet, or the players' areas. So I went down the range straight away and just thought, I better just come and have a few and whatever. Walked on the range and literally, there's three people on the range. There's me, there's Spieth, and there's Kepka.
Sick, Dad.
I just threw myself I thought, I better get used to this. So I just threw myself in the deep end and put myself right next to Spieth. and I mean, I stood back and watched a few times, just trying to, like, obviously take it in. But at the same time, I was trying to look like I wasn't being a fanboy, but really I was.
We'd all be the same, so no one will deny it.
Nah, there was a few people who were definitely, like, there's a few times, especially when you were walking up and down the ranges, you're walking on, you're just kind of looking around and you're seeing, you know, like the likes of Koepka and Rory, who you would just stop for and just kind of watch for 5 or 10 minutes. And I'm also just from it, obviously trying to learn and watch, but also just to see, you know, just, you see it on the telly all the time, but to kind of see it if you don't eyes and what's going on.
To be so close.
Definitely a bit of that.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a few little things like that through the week that were just a bit mad. Like in the locker room, it's all in alphabetical order. So, like, your name's on your locker, and I've got, like, obviously my last name being Croft, I've got, like, Casey close to me, and then the D's are to the right of me. So I'm, like, two lockers away from DeChambeau. I'm there on Monday morning, just, like, got there on Monday morning, and I'm, like, tying my shoes, but I'm kind of, like, stood in the corridor in the way without really realising I was in the way. And just, like, looked to my left, and DeChambeau was just stood there, kind of, like, waiting for me. sorry. And he was like, oh, like, and obviously in his American accent, he was like, oh, don't worry, you know, it's cool. And he had, like, a good little 2 or 3 minute conversation with me, and it was just like, this is mad.
Amazing,
just taking it all in, and yeah.
Had I been running around the place with a selfie stick, just getting pictures with a lot of them?
I was just crazy, like, just turning around the locker room, and obviously, like, Sergio was just there, and it's like, morning, you okay? And he's like, yeah. I'm just like, this is crazy. But
yeah,
I mean, the longer you were there in the week, it was like the more normal it felt.
Yeah.
But then once you got home again on, like, the following week, it was like, that really happened.
You can see why it's driven you to obviously want it more now, can't you, when you're going through those type of experiences there. Well, talk us through, obviously, then, that you get the opportunity to put your name down in practice rounds. I know you mentioned on the last podcast you were open to play with Tommy. So you got a game with Tommy, didn't you? Talk us through that round and what happened with that.
Yeah, so Finno, obviously Tommy's caddy, was brilliant. All week, actually, with myself and with my caddy, and he kind of took us under his wing, and basically on the Monday when I got there, he'd sent me his number, so he just said, listen, just text me when you're there, and we'll sort something out. So Monday afternoon, I just gave him a text and just said, I'm around, kind of, you know, if you fancy that 9 holes, just let me know, no worries, kind of, if you can't. And he just said, listen, I'll sort it out for tomorrow if you want, kind of, I'll speak to you in a bit. Anyway, I'm on the range then, hitting balls. And my phone goes in my pocket, just a text, and it was just Finno saying, booked you in tomorrow, 12:40, you, Tommy, Shane and Padraig, is that okay?
Shane, nah, I'm not playing with them.
What are you thinking? Is my chance for the captain's pick?
I literally read this text, and my coach was like stood next to me, and he could see and he was like something wasn't normal, and he was like, "What?" And I just turned my phone around to him, and he just burst out laughing. It's just like, what the fuck?
Oh, so yeah,
so
you know,
so how was it?
So yeah, so obviously get there Tuesday morning, go in the players' lounge, have some brekkie and whatever, and then go down the range. Just had like a normal warm up, and then got down to the putting green about 20 minutes before, and met Finno on the green, and then he kind of walked us over to the first tee. We walk over the bridge down to the first tee and get on the first tee, and it's like I'm stood there. Rose is on the tee with Poulter. And then Tommy turned up and Padraig turned up and Shane turned up. So I was like, hang on a minute, I'm like stuck on the tee with Arthur Radical. Anyway, Rose and Poulter tee off. And like everyone's just like, I'm just introducing myself to everyone. And Tommy was brilliant. Just kind of like saying well done on being there and, you know, have a great week and enjoy yourself and all that stuff. And the same for Shane and Padraig Arrington. And then literally I'm just stood there kind of waiting to tee off. And I just turned around to my side and I was just talking to Mick McCaddy, and I just turned around to my side and Kepka's just like there. And he just goes, "Hey man, I'm Brooks." And I was like,
I know.
And he was like, I'm just gonna play the first couple of holes with you guys, that okay? And Finno was like, "Well, we're in a four, you know, Brooks." Like, and he was like, "Ah, it doesn't matter, he won't say anything. Like, we'll just play the first two and we're gonna jump across the nine." So we end up playing a five ball down the first two holes. Kepka's with us for the first two holes. It was just like absolutely, I'm walking off that tee. To be fair, at my tee shot, I was probably as nervous as I was on Thursday. And then we get halfway down the fairway, and I was just like walking down the fairway thinking, what is going on here? Like, you're walking down that fairway with obviously them boys and all the coaches and like, you know, like the likes of Phil Kenyon and stuff. And it's just like, wow. Like,
what are the crowds like on that sort of day when you're there?
That day, like on the Monday, I played with another lad who qualified, so we didn't really have anyone watching us. No one kind of knew who we were. But that day, obviously because of who I was with, we had a bit of a following, but it was good. It was good to get used to it.
Yeah, I was thinking that might be boss for you.
It was good to get used to it. It was good to get used to that atmosphere, that kind of atmosphere around you, and like the movements around you and people watching you on that scale. There was definitely more crowd on a Tuesday than the other practice days I had because of who I was with.
So
it was a good little kind of precursor really to say, look, this is what it's going to be like on Thursday when it's busier, when there's more people here. That was actually a big L.
What club was it off the first there in front of Brooksy and all that?
Oh, Driver.
Was it? Where's it go?
I actually hit the fairway.
It was
a necky fade down the fairway, but it done the job.
I was going to say the next question was going to be, did you bomb it past them or what?
Oh, no.
Are they scary long, are they?
I mean, through the course of the round, there's like Kepka, the one he hit on the first was silly. Like, he's obviously one of the longest, you know, it was miles, but they were a good, you know. I'm not the longest. I'm pretty average when it comes to length. I'm just my strength is more accuracy, and I'm trying to get longer all the time and work on speed and stuff. But generally, more accuracy is my friend really. But like there was a couple of holes where it was kind of not much in it, and then there was other holes where they've stepped on one and they've knocked it 30 yards past me. Yeah, but there was a couple of holes where Tommy, you could see where he just hit it like a stock one, but then another hole there was a couple of holes downwind where you could see he just tried to give it that a little bit more, and he got a lot more out of it. Like, there's more in the tank. It was one of them more that the most impressive thing to me was more the way they could flight the ball as consistently as they did. So I'm hearing them talk to the caddies about the shots they're gonna hit, and it was more the consistency and the quality of the ball flight and how consistent it was and how good and on demand it was, really.
Like, I the mean, execution Shane Lowry, of what they're saying.
Yeah. And like Shane Lowry hitting 2-iron, you know, knee high for 250 yards off most tees was impressive to watch. There was things like that were really impressive. And there was a few shots in that round that you were thinking, wow, like that's serious golf.
So who took the money then? More to the point.
Well, it's funny actually. We got on the first tee and And obviously, we were all just talking on the team. And I think, I can't remember who it was, but one of them said, should we have a match? And Tommy said, yeah, we'll have England v Ireland, shall we? So it was me and Tommy. I was like, yeah, yeah, sound, no worries. We just had like better ball match play. But they didn't like, they didn't mention anything about money. So I just thought, oh, we're just having a game. I really didn't care. Like, I was just like, I just want to play the game. Like, I didn't need any more pressure than there was. But
there's enough going on.
We started off all right. And then me and Tommy were kind of one up around nine. And then we get to, I think Tommy birdied 11. And then I think I birdied like 13 or 14. So we get to like the 15th tee. And I just said to Tommy, are we one up? And he goes, well, yeah, yeah, we're one up, yeah. And I just, to my left, Larry's talking to Harrington. And I just heard him say, come on, Paddy, we can't lose 100 quid to these two. I've just looked at Tommy, and Tommy's gone, it's £100 a man. So I was like, oh, right. So we, Tommy birdied 17 and we won 2-1.
Oh,
so
nice.
we got on the 18th and they were like, double or quit. So I was like, sound. And then Tommy lifted out for us to double it. So we took 100 quid each off them.
Nice.
So,
we come off the back of the 18th green, and Harrington was like joking, like laughing, said, which one is, do you want us to, like, which one do you want paying from, me or Shane? And Shane was like, let's give him 50 each. So they give me like a £50 note each, but I had a pen in me and they said, do you mind signing them? And I'm like, no. So I've got them to sign them. I'm going to frame them. Like, yeah, that was funny. Yeah.
That's so good. So then into the tournament mode then. So talk us through the obviously, unfortunately, you didn't make the cut, did you? But what were the 2 days like that you were there?
Surreal. Obviously, the Thursday I was, or the 2 days I was with Paul Waring.
Yeah.
Who was obviously only off the Whittle. And Aaron Rye. Aaron Rye from Audubon. So with two English lads, it was, you know, comfortable. Paul's caddy, Alex. I know Alex through the PGA, Alex Evans. So that was quite comfortable because, you know, I just walked on the team. It was like, there was a bit of familiarity to who I was with.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's nice
stuff. And Aaron Rye is probably one of the nicest lads you've ever met in your life. He couldn't have been nicer. So it was comfortable. But then obviously, you know, on the Thursday morning, get on the range, it was a bit of a different feel. It was like, yeah, this is real now. Like, it's actually happening kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I got down the first tee, obviously, and got on there. And again, I was absolutely... it was one of them people have said to me since, what was the first tee like? Were you nervous? Yeah, I was more nervous than I've been in my entire life, but at the same time I was absolutely loving it. So it was I'd do it again tomorrow, do you know what I mean? Like, it was extremely nervous but extremely fun at the same time. And obviously having family and friends in the grandstand behind me and stuff, it was amazing. I managed again on the Thursday to actually get it down the fairway, so that was nice.
I started
all right, actually. I had two good shots on the first, and I just burned the edge for birdie. So started with a solid par. I was like, right, okay. And then I had a bit of a rough run, kind of from two through to six. They were tough holes, and it was a little bit of the occasion as well. Kind of, you know, I generally tend to handle my nerves and pressure quite well. Them things don't really scare me, but it was just more the enormity of the occasion. I was genuinely like shaken over a lot of the first few shots.
Yeah.
I was just trying to kind of get used to that. And, you know, that'll only hold me in good stead going forward. And obviously if you ever get to that level again, then you know what to expect. But then that first kind of, well, from two to six, about five holes, I just hit a few bad shots and I hit a few good shots that probably got a few bad breaks, but it was that type of golf course where you had to be so precise on where you were landing the ball. If you were a few yards off, you were going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
And then from there on the back nine, I played well. Like, I kind of steadied myself around seven, and the back nine I actually played really well. And I think I came back and 1 under on the back nine, or level par. But I think I was 2 under for the last five, and I made a few birdies on the way in. And it felt like a positive day at the end of the day. I come off and I was like, right, okay, I need a good one tomorrow to make the course. I'm going to have to go and choose a ridiculous score to make the cup, but there's a chance.
Yeah. You haven't played yourself out the tournament. That's the main thing, isn't it?
No, exactly. Yeah. And then Friday morning, I was actually first off. So it was a bit of almost like a quick turnaround, because it was like I teed off at 11:30 on day one. So by the time I'd come off, signed my card, been in the player lounge, had something to eat and everything, it was like 5-6 o'clock or whatever it was. And then it was like, hang on a minute, I'm back up in the morning at like 3:15. Gonna have to get up at 3 to get, you know, be ready to leave the hotel at 3:30, to be here 4 to get ready for teeing off. I think I was teeing off at 6:35.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was. I just went back to the hotel, tried to get my head down as best I could, but I struggled sleeping with the light. It was so light. Still, yeah. But I managed to get a good enough sleep in, and then we got up the next morning, obviously in the middle of the night. Got there, kind of got ready as normal. And then the Friday again, I made the good par down the first, and then again from 2 to 6, I just seemed to really struggle through them holes really, and I made a bit of a hash of things on the second, from a good position, and then again kind of through them holes just dropped a few more, and then again steadied by 7, played all right from there, played well on the back 9. It was more that early part of the round both days that kind of killed me chances of making the cut really.
Well, I was going to ask that because I had a little look at the card over the 2 days back then, and I've refreshed myself again. So I had a look from holes 13 to 18 over the 2 rounds. You actually won under, one under par. So is that what you put it down to? Is it just obviously the fact that nerves, first time near the occasion, as to why obviously you never made the cut? Because the golf's obviously good enough, isn't it?
Yeah, it was like a mix of. They were probably the toughest holes statistically on the golf course that week.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm 100% right on this, but someone told me, I think they said that obviously Morikawa won. I think they said Morikawa for the first 6 holes was level par for the week, but obviously he was 15 under for the tournament.
Just so shows you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that because I'm not sure for definite, but someone just told me that.
We love a fact check, lad. We'll fact check.
them first 6 holes were tough. They were tough, a tough start. And couple that with the extra kind of nerves that you weren't really accounting for, and a few misplaced shots and what have you, and it was quite easy to rack up a couple of numbers through them first few holes.
Yeah.
But after that, like I say, I was proud of the way I kind of steadied myself and then battled back. I'm not the type of person to, I never have been, to kind of just cave in. I'll keep fighting, I'll keep digging in, I'll stay gritty and stay resilient. And I wanted to do it as well for, not just for myself, but obviously for all my family and friends who travelled down there and made the effort to come and watch me. I wanted to do it for them as well.
Yeah.
On the Friday after I finished, I was quite disappointed. But then by Saturday morning, I was just made up again, because I just thought, you know what, at the end of the day, you've been there, you've done it, you qualified, you did the hard work. It was about, if you'd have made the cut this week, it would have been the best thing ever. But at the same time, it's not the end of the world either.
Like if someone had said to you a couple of months back, look, this is what you're going to be doing this Saturday morning. You've played in the Open, you've met Koepka, you've done all this. Like you'd have took it, wouldn't you?
Oh, 100%, yeah, exactly. That's it. 1,000,000,000%. And I spoke to the RNA there, and they gave me some tickets because obviously I've missed the cut. They sorted me out tickets for the weekend. So I just stayed with my friends and family and watched the weekend as a fan. And just came outside the ropes, and because I could have stayed like inside the ropes, but I wouldn't have been able to go, and because of the way the COVID situation was, you couldn't mix with the crowd. So I was like, well, they were staying inside the bubble all weekend. I've been in it all week, and I'd love to be in it forever. But at the end of the day, I'd be in this bubble all weekend without being able to actually really do anything. Where I'd rather go and say, look, I'll go outside the ropes now, and I'll just go and
enjoy
myself with my friends and family and enjoy the whole occasion. So I stayed all the way till the end.
It's good for learning as well, because while you're playing those first 2 rounds, you're not seeing what everyone else is doing. But when you're going out, you know what it's like to play them all, so you can see what they're doing different.
Yeah, and it was mad. Obviously, I've been to a few Opens in the past watching, but it was mad having then spectating in one that you've played in and knowing what they would be thinking, where they were.
It was
crazy, really. But I just enjoyed the weekend then, and I stayed right until the end and saw Morikawa all out on the Sunday on the 18th then. And then came home on the Sunday night.
What a week.
Well, it's a week you're never going to forget anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, it was by far the best week of my life. And even the week in the lead up, everything that happened before it, the qualifying and that time in between qualifying to going. If I'd do anything to live all that again.
Being on our podcast and all that.
The podcast
highlight. But going forward, it just makes you, like you were saying earlier, it just makes you want to do it more and more.
Well, that's what's so good about the Open, though, isn't it? Because it's only 3 good rounds away from, I know, obviously only 3 good rounds. Can't remember the last time I put 3 good rounds together. But
3 good holes for you, lad.
But it's 3 good rounds and you're back there next year, do you know what I mean? So it's.
Yeah, and the good news is next year, because of getting in it this year, I get to go straight to final.
So two good rounds.
Yeah, so that'll be, that's one kind of thing out of the way, one little plus, for next year.
Anything can happen on that Thursday, though, can't it? The weather, like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
definitely. You'll be playing the golf of your life, shit weather, and then you're not in final, so at least you've got a little leg up, haven't you, there?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Boss.
Oh, good to hear the story, mate. But as we always do on these podcasts, obviously, we want to know how you actually got to that point. So
yeah.
We always talk about journeys.
You can bring you back down to earth now, where you started from.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, 100%.
So what was it that got you into the game, mate? When how old was you?
So my dad's played golf for as long as I've been born. He's played golf for 30-odd years. So, I mean, growing up, I was like any normal kid. I loved me footy. I'm still obviously a massive footy fan, but I play football. And then when I was about four, I think my dad put a club in my hand. I'm just in the back garden, plastic set, one of them ones. And then started going to junior group lessons at Heighton and Prescott when I was five. So started going there then and just did the group coaching for a couple of years. And started getting all right and going the range with my dad and stuff like that. And then got to eight. And Heighton created the membership where you could join as a junior, but you could only play with your dad until you were old enough, kind of thing, until you were like 11.
Yeah.
So then 3 years kind of just started going on the golf course with my dad just in the evenings, just playing a few holes and going on the practice ground and chipping and putting around the greens and obviously got a taste for it. And then once I was 11, I was eligible then to become part of the junior section and play with all the other kids. And that's where it started, really, yeah. So then progressed through the juniors at Heighton, kind of all the way through in the junior team and then got to 14. And I think I was probably playing off about 8 or 9 at the time. And I got the call off or the letter through off Lancashire to go and try out for Lancs. Got in the Lancashire boys squad and then was in the Lancashire boys squad then from 14 until 18. Which was great at the time because you got a lot of the coaching days you could get a lot out of them and playing the matches for the team and stuff. You had access to some really good coaching.
Yeah, and at that age, are you just solely thinking about golf there, or are you still playing your footy? Is golf the career that you wanted to take, or was you just thinking?
Yeah, I was still playing footy. I was never really that good. I was never anything special at football. I was a goalkeeper, but I absolutely loved it. But then by the time I was probably getting to like 40, even probably when I started getting the call off Lancs, I was playing footy, kind of getting to the point where I was playing football but scared of getting hurt in case I couldn't play golf.
Yeah.
And that's when I knew. That's when I knew then. So
sacrifice one of them.
Yeah, I got to like 15, 16 and just stopped playing footy then and I just focused on golf entirely. Yeah.
Going on from Lancashire then, kicking on, what did going to Lancashire help progress you to a better standard, obviously, as you were saying, with the coaching days and all that? Is that it? Would you say that's attributed a lot to later life? Because have we heard that a few times on the pod?
Yeah, Lancashire was great because you were around a lot of other lads, obviously the same age as you, who were the same level as you or slightly better. It was good to look and obviously to make friends with them and whatever and to compete with each other, but to kind of scale and engage where you were in relation to other people at that level at your age.
Who was your age group, Dan?
I was with, there was like myself, Oliver Clark, Declan Owingsworth, who you said about earlier, who I played with in Europro last week. There was a few of us, I'm trying to think who else was on that group actually. There's a few lads who I haven't seen for a long time, but there was a few other lads. I'm just, Callum Blinkhorn was another one actually. Callum's doing well now.
We spoke to Callum
last week.
Yeah, he's a nice lad, Cal. I think he's been in America for a few years.
Yeah,
but we were all on the same like Lancashire squad, and then obviously you had the older lad and the younger lad as well. You'd see on the coaching days.
Yeah,
but the coaching days were great. You used to take some good stuff out of them. There were some really good coaches at the time. You had like Jim Payne, who was obviously at SNA.
Yeah, Jim.
And Ian Lee, who was from Hayall. But he's a really good coach. So they were great to learn from on them coaching days and to take a lot from to then obviously take back to the golf club to go and work on.
And do you still use some of that stuff now? Because I know obviously I'm shite at golf, but when I went to college and when I was half decent at golf, some of the tools that they give you there, like I still use them now, like things in your pre-shot routine, things in your practice, things in your important drills.
Yeah, there was definitely some of the drills that I remember Jim used to give me, some really good short game drills that I definitely still use. But then aside from Lancashire, I was at Heighton all the time. That was where I was always practicing, always playing. So I just used that stuff down there. But I think when I got to a little bit older than that, I started getting like my own coaching and having my own kind of one-on-one coaching sessions then, yeah.
Yeah. And how did the amateur career go success-wise? Did you win much? What did you play in?
Yeah, I mean, I did my PGA when I was 19. So I kind of didn't have a long amateur career as such where I played I played a few of them. I played in some of the junior stuff locally, and I played in the Faldo series, which is like a big junior event. And I won that at West Lancs.
Nice. Like West Lancs, don't you?
There's something about West Lancs, honestly. Yeah. There's something about that place. But I won that there when I was 15, won the under 16s. So I went to the grand final on Ireland and was there all week playing that. And you've got to obviously meet Nick Faldo when he was giving a few clinics out that week. So that was great. And then other than that, there's just like a few junior opens and local junior opens. I think SMA, I think I won that one once. Pleasington and even Walton, I think. And a few others just like that stuff. And then I started playing, once I was good enough, I started playing the Northern Order of Merits, which is obviously the 2-round scratch events. Yeah. Which were great, they were great to learn and to start playing at a better level, obviously on a number of different golf courses. I had a few good finishes in some of them, but from an amateur point of view, I didn't really like win anything big or anything that was like of note other than probably the Faldo series. But I played in some of the England events, like the Brabazon Trophy and the North of England and stuff like that. I played in them. I used to do them from when I was about 17, 18. I did them for a couple of years and played in that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And what was the reason then for going for your PGA at such a young age, at 19? What was the thought process behind that?
Yeah, so I went to obviously school and then went to sixth form and finished sixth form, and I kind of didn't really know what I wanted to do. Like, I didn't really want to go to uni, but I knew I wanted to be in golf, regardless of whether I was going to be good enough to play the game for a living. It was more, well, if I don't, what's plan B? I didn't want to kind of, at the time I was 19, I was off plus one. I was good, but I wasn't at the level where, you're playing for England or you're looking at getting in the Walker Cup or you're going to get some sort of backing from an amateur point of view to play.
Yeah.
So it was like, well, if I don't, obviously I'm going to keep working hard, I'm going to keep trying to get better, I'm going to keep pushing on, but if I don't get to the level I want to be at, what am I going to do? Because I don't want to get to late 20s and kind of have no future, but no kind of no backup plan, kind of ready to go. Yeah. So I had the opportunity at Heighton to become the assistant and do my PGA. And I thought, I like coaching and I enjoy me coaching. Like, obviously, I still coach now. So the idea was, if I get my PGA done, get it out the way kind of thing, I'll have it done by the time I'm 22, 23. I'll be fully qualified. I've kind of got that in the bank. In the meantime, I can just keep trying to work and get better and push on. And obviously, if that goes as I hope it does, fantastic. If it doesn't, I've got a good kind of foundation behind me then.
It's like a safety net, isn't it? Like, you're not just going out there putting your sole effort into playing and then you turn around, like you say, and you've got nothing to do. You've got a stable of coaches, you get money coming in. It's like...
You're
funding.
That's it. That was more the thing as well. It was like, I can fund myself, because if I do my PGA, obviously you've got to work a certain amount of time. I can start as a coach, I can earn some decent money and fund me golf. And there's a lot of lads who don't do the PGA and just go and play, and I don't knock that at all. I actually admire that, because I think, you're having a proper go and you're doing it. But at the same time, I didn't want to get to that point and then think, right, I've got to try and find a career now. That's why I wanted to get out of the way, like you say, to fund my golf career, to have a backup plan. And if things don't come off, it's almost like there's less pressure on it then. If it doesn't come off, it's not the end of the world, because I have got something else behind me.
Yeah, and I think that's why the college setup in America is so successful, because obviously you go through the 4 years in college, they play at an elite level in all sports, really. And then obviously when they come out of college and graduate, they've got an opportunity to go and play, but they've also got that qualification that sits behind that.
That's it.
If golf doesn't work out, they've got a different career path.
That's it. And do you know what? I was having this conversation with someone the other day, someone who a coach, a junior to a coach. I was speaking to the dad, because I've said it. When you look at America, I know it's a much bigger you know, far vaster country, but the way they have it over there from a sport point of view is absolutely bang on. Whereas like over here, there's nothing really like, no. You know, you've got MyESCO and stuff like that, but there's not like a system where you go, well, okay, this is what you do and this is your way of getting into it, you know, and this is your way of pushing on to an elite level, but yeah, also having something behind you.
It's driven towards county, isn't it? County and national, elite level in this country. Yeah. Whereas in America, it's more geared towards, obviously, they've still got the American national team that you can play for, but
yeah,
more geared towards, obviously, doing your education, performing in the tournaments, and then obviously, and you're getting watched in those tournaments, because some of them are televised in the top events, aren't they? So you're pretty much ready to go on tour. Like we've seen it with the likes of Morikawa, who won the Open, Matty Wolf, Scotty Scheffler, the list goes on. Hovland,
yeah,
Ram, you know, this season Hovland's won on the PGA Tour. So it's obviously there is something missing in this country when it comes to that type of stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there could definitely be I don't know what it would be, but I think there could definitely be a better system to kind of help young lads who are good at sport, not just golf, you know, other sports as well, where they've got a talent in sport and they, you know, they want to push on it and still have a structure and a guidance to what they're doing with their life. But the PGA as well, like, to be fair, from a playing point of view, I have found that a really good schooling, because some of the people you play against on the PGA, the standard might not be as good as, you know, your Euro Pro or some of your other mini tours, but the top 10 or 20 lads who play on the PGA events in this area are really, really good players, and a lot of them have kind of been in and done it. You know, you like to David Shacklady, you like to Phil Archer.
Shacklady's a prime example, isn't he?
Exactly, and so you're playing with them, you know, at 19, 20 years of age, you're playing in events with these, you know, ex, or not even ex, this current, you know, touring pros who've been there and done it, and you could learn a lot from them, because it's almost like you're the youngest person there, and you're learning from the stuff from a playing point of view. It's actually been great to play with them, you know, them who've been there and kind of done it a bit, and you learn a lot from them, and also kind of some of the things to do and not do.
Yeah,
definitely.
And how did you find the whole course? And is it a difficult course to do the PJ, or did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was. The PJ is obviously you do it all from home, and you go to the Belfry once a week. Yeah, sorry, once a year for the week's long kind of residential, where you have some lectures and check in with a few of the lecturers and any help you need kind of thing. But no, it was good. I mean, it was good in the way as well. I had a couple of other lads who were now in the area. We were doing it at the same time. So if you were struggling with anything, you could just bounce it off each other, or you had like a mentor as well, you could just ring if you ever need any help. And it was good. I mean, if you were used to kind of, if you'd done stuff at sixth form before that was kind of assignment based, which I did, it helped you a lot, because you knew how to kind of structure things. And the content wasn't overly difficult, you know, especially if you read into what you had to do and what they were asking. If you actually read the background information they gave you, it was very doable, yeah.
Yeah, I always used to just have a just wing overnight in my ESCO, just do the assignment, kind of Red Bull, look at the screen, ask someone for the notes, copy it down and hand it in.
Yeah, we've all been there, like.
Can you wing the PGA like that? Because I might have a go at it.
I'm not going to lie, there was a few submissions that were going in 2 minutes before the deadline at
20. Yeah, I love it.
Great, isn't it? Great.
But, yeah, it was... There was some stuff that was a bit more taxing than other stuff, but it was all about golf generally. So, you know, I mean, like the coaching elements I found really fun. The retailing elements where you're working out like how to cost price a shop, that was boring as anything. But, you know, it was just one of the things you'd have to get done as part of the qualification.
Yeah, I suppose it gives you a line of sight of where you want to go though, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? If you'd enjoy that retail stuff, then, you know, maybe golf's not for you. But the fact that you're enjoying the golf and stuff shows you're in the right place.
Exactly, yeah, and it's one of the things as well that once you kind of get it done out the way, you've got it forever. So it was just like, just get it done, just get the work done. You've got to get done. Just give them what they're asking for, and then, you know, obviously you've got the qualification behind you then.
And then what was the plan from qualification? Then was it right? I've got that now. Just solely focus on the golf, or was it just straight into coaching and just trying to balance that?
Yeah. So when I was at Heighton, like I said, as when I started my PGA. And I was there for like my first couple of years, and then obviously Heighton's where I grew up, and that place is home to me. And I'm still a member there now, but I love the place more than anything. But it wasn't quite working out from a work point of view for me. I wasn't getting to play as much as I wanted to play and playing as many events as I wanted to play. So I had the opportunity to move down to Everton. A mate of mine was working there and there was a job going. So I took that down there, went to Everton for the year, which was great. I enjoyed it down there, and there's a lot going on down there, development wise. And it's a great place. It's developing a lot. But I wasn't there. I had loads of opportunity to play, but wasn't doing any coaching, and I wanted to start coaching, you know, more and more. So the job then came up at Mersey Valley a year later, which in everything at the time, it was perfect for me. It was, you know, time working, but also time to coach and time to play, which is what
I'm still doing now.
Which is what I'm still doing now. And obviously I went there just as I was kind of completing my qualification. So I was kind of still an assistant, but was just about to qualify. So I kind of had the same role there since I started. But obviously once I got my qualification boxed off, it was just like, yeah, you know, I just carry on with my coaching, carry on with me playing. But, you know, going forward, you've got more scope of what you can do, you know, with your qualification now.
And obviously we know we've spoke about earlier in the conversation about the Open and where it got to that point. And so how did your pro career go up to that? Was you playing in just Euro Pro? Was you playing PGA events?
So I've played since I started the PGA. I've always played in the PGA local North Region events. And kind of based at first, I was just trying to like see where I was at. So I was like, I'll just play in this stuff, see where I'm at, see what my level's like, you know, see how I can compare myself and go from there. And then the first 2 years, I just kind of just played PGA, and then had a little bit of 1836 and stuff like that, like local mini tours. And then I went for my Euro Pro card in 2019, and I actually missed stage one by one to get to final stage. I just didn't play very well.
Yeah.
And that was a bit like a bit of a kick in the teeth, but it was like, okay, you know you can play better than that. So you can do it. It's just you obviously didn't play very well this week. So the score that were being shot weren't a million miles away. You know, I'd played better through the year than at that event. You know, I think I went there, I think I'd won me first event on the North Region about 2 or 3 months before.
Yeah.
So I knew I could do better, but so it was like, okay, right, just go again. So then the year after I carried on playing the North Region, carried on playing 1836, carried on playing all that stuff. And then it's been the same kind of, obviously the last year has been a bit mad with COVID and everything that's gone on. But then last year I went to final stage last year for Euro Pro, and then I think I missed the cut at final stage. Yeah. So I had some status this year, but with how busy the Euro Pros have been this year, I didn't get any starts out of it. So again, I just played North Region and 1836 and a bit of 2020 and that stuff. I mean, the North Region stuff, I've done okay in some of the North Region stuff. I won the assistants Order of Merit 1 year on the North Region, and I think it was 2019. I won the Order of Merit for the year, and I've won a few of the assistant events and a couple of the North Region kind of one day events. Won a nice. Couple of them and done all right. So, yeah, I mean, I've done okay. I've had some good finishes. I've had some not so good finishes, but always just trying to push on, keep getting better, keep working hard, and just keep. Obviously, the Open was like the biggest thing I've ever done up to this date, you know, by a mile. I mean, I've been to final qualifying twice before, as we said last time. Once as an amateur and then once in 2018 as a pro. But so, yeah, to qualify for that was by far the biggest thing I'd done. But, I mean, I've done okay at regional level so far. And obviously this year now, I've just been to, as we were speaking about before we started, I've just been to stage one last week, the Form B All, got me place in final stage next week. So, be down to final stage next week to try and get me car for next year.
So what's the plans for the future? Then you're going to keep smashing on and progressing? Like, you're going to try Euro Pro, or you're going to become the next Shack Lady and just start cleaning up all the one days and take a few grand though?
No, it's obviously, you know, like we were saying before, with on the back of the Open, I want to play golf, and that's all I've ever wanted to do. And yeah, I want to keep pushing on, keep working hard, keep getting better, and keep trying to just elevate myself. Just keep, you know, like, I want to, if I get, hopefully next week, go and get my card, and then next year have a really good go on Euro Pro and have a good go at that level and see where I'm at. Hopefully next year as well, there'll be a proper European Tour Q School, which has been cancelled for the last 2 years because of COVID. So hopefully there'll be a European Tour Q School in the next year. And hopefully, you know, go and do all right in that and try and jump up onto possibly onto Challenge Tour or whatever. But the standard now in professional golf, especially at like Euro Pro level, is as strong as I've ever seen it. Yeah.
Yes.
You need to chill honest, out, don't you? Like, what is going on?
You're seeing like 59, honestly, like, you're seeing 58 on the challenge tour. It's just, what is going on?
But it's great to see, like, I mean, it's great to see how strong professional golf is. But at the same time, when you're trying to be a part of it, it's hard work. But
yeah,
it's good because it makes you, it pushes you on, it makes you realize, you know, you can't just like amble your way through and just kind of just put a little bit of effort in here and there and hope you'll do all right. If you're going to do it, you're going
to
do it.
Definitely, yeah. 200 or 300 over a couple of rounds isn't good enough no more. Do you know what I mean? You've got to be shooting 700s now.
Yeah, and like a few years ago, I used to look at the Euro Pro scores and like, you know, 800 would win the event or 10 would win the event. And,
that's it.
And there wasn't as many playing on it, whereas now, I think especially with the way, like I said, the way COVID's affected the tour the last couple of years, Euro Pro this year was like busier than ever. And obviously because of that, the standard was deeper and the scoring was better. But some of the scores they were churning out this year, you're looking at it thinking, like, you could go and play well or relatively well and miss the cut.
Yeah, like, a lot of people are doing that, yeah.
But that shows, like I was saying, you've just got to keep getting better and keep working hard. And at the end of the day, if you keep doing that and keep getting better and keep improving and work on the right parts of your game that you know you've got to work on, you'll get there. You've just got to keep doing it.
No, definitely.
Yeah. No, perfect, mate. And we wish you the best of luck to doing that anyway. We'll be keeping an eye on you. Have a little game with you as well soon.
No, definitely, mate. 100% up for that, yeah.
Well, speaking to Tim the other day, you were saying we'll get a little us versus you two or maybe throw the balls up.
Yeah, go for it, yeah.
I'll take them signed 50 quids off you.
Yeah, just make sure there's some money on the line then if we're playing you two. Let me
start. Oh, he wants to play money for us, doesn't he, mate?
Let's go.
Doesn't want to play against Pods League for money.
Yeah, but no, by all means, we'll definitely get a game in. Definitely.
1,000,000%.
Yeah, let's do it. That's good to hear your story, mate, in the open journey. Boss. Fantastic. Yeah, it was great to see you there, mate. And obviously,
it's good to finally get the pod done as well. We've had a few cancellations in there, haven't we? But
it's been
boss, I enjoyed that.
It's been the last couple of months ever since the open has been really busy. One from still obviously playing, but like coaching's been really busy. And to be honest, the last few months have all been a bit of a whirlwind, like with everything that kind of went on and just kind of trying to get everything back to kind of normal as such. But now it's been really busy this year from a playing point of view, from a coaching point of view, obviously with the way golf's been affected through the pandemic, it's just gone mad.
Yeah.
So hopefully kind of now over the winter, just try and set everything back down and put a plan together for next year then to push on. I mean, I want to try and focus more on me playing as best as I can. And go from there, yeah.
Well, the talent's there, mate. Wish you the best of luck in doing that anyway.
Yeah, nice one. Thanks for that. Appreciate it.
As I say, the story was brilliant.
No, it was boss.
We'll obviously catch up very soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Nice one. Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Cheers, Dan.
Cheers.
Ladies and gentlemen, oh boy, is he out of sync.